Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw. Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw. Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw. Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Cam, how does this add up to, or does this reach the expectations of the wild and crazy and newsworthy Raw after Manias that WWE fans have come to anticipate every year?
I'm going to say yes, but I think it does have to be graded a bit on a curve. This is the second year of the two-night Mania, and people really just seem burned out. Like, you get Cody out there early, you get the crowd into that, they're into Bianca, like the faces are getting good reactions, but there's only so much energy I think you can expect people to have, and a lot of these are people who did go to shows three nights in a row. So I'm still going to say yes. Like, if you put this same show on after one night of Mania, I think that it works. But I just think people were just a bit burnt out.
Yeah, when they're in the same town, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, you're going to get fans who not only are, exhausted, but a lot of them aren't even from that town. You know, I don't know how many – I mean, I assume most people in the building were local because I think a lot of people just had to, get back to their normal lives. But that can play a part in it too, is just the exhaustion from travel. But that said, let's set aside the crowd and just talk about what WWE booked. We had – Roman Reigns celebrating with two titles, Bianca Belair celebrating her title win. This is sort of an ascending importance. We had Elias show up as Ezekiel, or his younger brother. We'll get into that. And we had Veer show up. Finally, it really happened. And we had Cody's return to Raw and the highly anticipated promo. I'm trying to think, was there anything else that they would have kind of marked down as, like, big things happening on this show?
Veer came out. By the way,
Veer, but I didn't bring up Bron Breakker and Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, Bron Breakker and Dolph Ziggler. You get the title back on Breakker in front of potentially a larger audience. Definitely viewership-wise, or probably in person. I think the reaction, like, that's kind of where it fell off because, again, this isn't a guy that everybody there knows because the numbers show – that everybody switches over and watches NXT. But I think him and Dolph were good enough to where the reaction was solid. But, yeah, again, Bianca, a storyline that I thought got off on the wrong foot, this was absolutely a let-it-play-out moment. It worked out perfectly, and the crowd's very much into her. You got to see RK-Bro, still very over with the audience. Like you said, Roman coming out at the end, even if just to tease that he's going to do more on Friday to talk about his plans. He did look visibly in pain. That's kind of scary. But, I do think that they gave enough, especially with Cody opening, for that audience to where it did qualify as a night after Mania moment, a Raw after Mania that people could get into. I do think so.
I understand there's a basketball game going on also.
Is that you hearing the clapping in the background of this show? That's happening at my house. Yes, that's happening right now. And I just want to say, Wade, are we allowed to talk about dark matches that are happening now?
Yeah,
Cody just beat KO and has a live mic now, apparently.
Oh, cool.
Telling me in the Twitch chat. Shout out to the Twitch chat.
Well, we'd love to hear from people in the building tonight if Well, they're listening to Cody right now, so they're not listening to me say that. But we may have people calling in from the show tonight, so that'll be cool if that happens. Well, the reason I asked about if there was a basketball game on is obviously WWE is cognizant of that, and they sort of have this dilemma. They want a big rating the day after Raw. Not everybody who's a Raw fan, a WWE fan, is big into NCAA basketball. But, you know, that's sort of lingering there as a you know, as a possibility that they're wanting to put on a big show, but not the biggest show because, you know, they may take a hit in terms of viewership.
I wonder if they'll ever switch that. I mean, we and again, Wade, you put me in rooms I never thought I'd be in. We actually had the opportunity to go backstage at Mania Saturday night, and we opted to go to a bar to watch the Final Four because it was just, you know, it's history. It's Duke, North Carolina, and it's like this is, you know, a moment that you're not going to get again. And so even with that being done, you know, you have two college basketball blue bloods in North Carolina and Kansas. It's really hard to go against something like that. You know, it's really tough to combat, especially when, and again, no spoilers, people aren't watching this, but, you know, when it's a good game. So, yeah.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. So I thought that this lived up to the Raw after Mania, but just barely. You know, I think the Cody promo was really good, but it wasn't like buzz generating. Oh my God, you had to see what he just said. Your jaw's going to be dropped. You won't believe it. It was more of what, you know, I think Cody should have been doing in AEW, which is just stay within the narrative structure, have a mission, explain what it is, be likable, be relatable, as much as having a super famous father and following in his footsteps on national television as a multimillion-dollar multi-year contract, as you're celebrating that, you know, I mean, there's a certain relatability to, you know, family, to father, son, to wanting to live up to your either avenge something that, I don't know if avenge is a word, but finish something that your father never quite finished.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was really good. And I mean, this is what I wish Cody had the direction, discipline, leadership, vision to do in AEW more instead of the kind of Codyverse sideshow stuff. And that was, you know, at times self-indulgent and frankly just needed an editor. This is like an example of WWE being a better environment for Cody to keep him on track because there's so much natural charisma that he has and a connection with the crowd that we've seen so many different times, but it got a little off track or a lot off track in AEW. I think he's still a little in denial over why that happened. But it really doesn't matter. He got a fresh start tonight in front of an audience, and that audience gave him what he deserved, which is, you know, a clean slate. They were happy to see him. I didn't sense there were a ton of AEW fans who were going to be like, we're going to ruin Cody's WWE debut or re-debut. And I think he delivered a good promo, and I think people want to see what's next. All that said, and this is a compliment, not a criticism, a feature, not a flaw. It wasn't like that buzz generating, oh my God, you missed this crazy thing. Cody just let loose on the Young Bucks or Tony Khan. Like it didn't have a bunch of subtext to it. You know, other than him, you know, just denying the obvious that he left AEW because it was a bad fit for him. And WWE was a fallback plan that worked out well. He's I'm fine storyline wise that he's framing it with a straight face as, this is where my unfinished business was. This is where I wanted to be. I'd advise him to take that approach too, but let's not confuse it with reality. What did you think of Cody's debut or re-debut?
So one thing I try to do, Wade, I try not to ask people who know Cody about Cody. And even when they volunteer like about stuff like, you know, people close to him had no idea that he was planning on leaving. Like, there's really something he played close to the chest. I think that the easiest way to look at it, as somebody on the outside looking in, is to say, hey, this is somebody who was on the cusp, like Cody with the mask, and right after he had the mask, I remember I went to a house show in Austin, and Cody said, hey, I want to be world heavyweight champion. Like, he said it flat out. And so I've looked at the last 6 years as a journey for him to say, hey, this is what I'm actually worth to me. So I'm going to go around the world. I am going to prove that I can hang with these top guys. I'm going to help start this brand new company. And even if on screen I'm not always the main character, you're going to see my mind. You're going to see my vision, even if it's intertwined with other people's. And I think that, you know, he went out. It's like these guys, Wade, who that first contract they have in the NBA or the NFL. The very first contract, maybe they don't live up to it. Maybe it goes okay, but then they go do a year or two in a city they don't necessarily want to live in a place that's not necessarily ideal for them, but they do well enough to get that next contract. You know, and I think Cody definitely proved himself. I think that it was very in bounds, the things that he said in this promo, and that's how you should do it. Like, everybody's not supposed to break the fourth wall. Everybody's not to expose as much of the business as they can. And in WWE, even when somebody does that, it's so rare. Like, it's a CM Punk who does it. It's not something that everybody's given kind of carte blanche for, and they shouldn't be. So, yeah, him going away, making a name for himself, and coming back to the best reaction he's ever had in front of a live crowd, it played out exactly how it's supposed to, even if it wasn't always the plan. But I thought it was really good. Like, my dad, as much of a legend as he is, he never ascended to this height that I think he should have. I put myself in a position to be there, and that's what I want to do. And even on the back end, I love Seth coming out and just being like, welcome back. Like, this ecosystem is one that I run with a few other guys. I think that you prove you belong, but you're no longer a surprise. You know, you're no longer a guy we don't see coming. You have to come in here and earn it with us at the top. I thought it played out exactly like it should.
Now, I think I like the promo a lot, and I'm all for telling the best story on television, regardless of its connection to reality. And I said that regarding why Cody's back in WWE. You know, the story he's telling and reality have some things in common, and other things are embellished and just flat out made up. But it makes for the best story. And I have for years, and I've gotten pushback on this, said don't tell a story on wrestling that is related to the truth, that's weaker than a completely made up story. That's better for the, you know, for it's a better story for the wrestling television show and feud and ultimate match. Like, make something up completely if it's better than forcing something awkwardly that's real. I haven't been a real advocate. I think there was an era maybe in the late 80s where, you know, you could get a little something extra out of a program if wrestling fans thought there's some reality to the feud and these people really don't like each other. And that was when, you know, there was still some veil of kayfabe and all that. I just think we're long past that. So just tell a great story. You know, I want the best actors for a movie cast to fight each other, not the two people who really don't like each other. That doesn't make the movie more entertaining if the acting isn't good. So I say all that because I think the story with Cody and Dusty is great. You know, I believe Cody's emotions were genuine. I think the fans were hanging on his every word. But Dusty did win, you know, the NWA world title. He is a former world champion. If the story now is Cody is trying to become a world champion because his dad never did, I mean, in that sort of – it's not overtly said, but the sort of the implication is the title that matters most, the one that was defended at Madison Square Garden, is something Dusty never got. It does take something away from what Dusty did accomplish in the NWA / WCW as champion. And it also takes away from Cody winning the NWA championship and having other titles in his history. So I just throw that out there because I think there's going to be some people, especially in the Jim Crockett territory, the old NWA territories, who go, wait a second. You know, Cody, come on. You know, your dad accomplished plenty. There is, you know, he wasn't a WWF guy, and we know why, you know, he didn't win the title in that situation. So anyway, I just throw that out there too.
Got you. You know, I'm always here for a good lie. A good lie, I love that. I think that one of the kind of polarizing things about, like, Cody, the Bucks, Kenny, and BTE is that people have decided that one group of them, are always telling the truth, and another group is embellishing, when it's like, no, there's so much gray to all of this, and these are also people you do not know, people you don't interact with, people who don't affect your life outside of the entertainment they give you. And so just sometimes enjoy the story, like ride along with it. But like you said, yeah, there's always embellishing on Cody's part, but there's always embellishing on anybody who's touching the main event's part, because their job is to tell the best story, not to have the most friends that they don't know. So yeah, I think it's going to work out just fine. I'm super curious to see, if Cody's trajectory is straight to the world title or if there's a bit of a pace, You know, if he's dealing with a Finn Balor, with an Austin Theory, with a Ricochet. Like, I do wonder if they're going to shoot him straight to the top and have him in a title match before the end of summer, or if it's something that they're going to build to. I am very curious.
Yeah, yeah, and we can delve into that more and think about what should happen and what would be best and what intrigues us the most. Let's pause. We've got a lot more to talk about, including all the things we said that were on the dock, the return of Elias, allegedly, and more. But let's pause and introduce ourselves first. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, April 4th, 2022. Thank you for downloading or live streaming the show. I am Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of many VIP podcasts and free podcasts throughout the week, including the Wade Keller Post Shows, the Wade Keller Podcast, and on the VIP side of things, The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Fan, Post Pay-Per-View Roundtables, and the Wade Keller Hotlines. The other voice you hear is Cameron Hawkins from the PW Torch East Coast cast. Cam, welcome to the co-host chair once again.
Always nice to be here. I've been, other than I think 2 years ago away when I was doing podcast after podcast, me and Travis put together this really extensive video with predictions. Now, I guess it was 3 years ago now because we were still able to go outside. Yeah, outside of that, this has probably been the busiest weekend I've had.
I just lost your audio, Cam. You said it's the busiest weekend you've had in years. I never know when this happens, if it's my connection or yours. Hello, Cam. I will message him. We'll see if he hears me. And
I have no idea what happened there.
You're back.
It just went away. But no, yeah, I was going to say, this is, outside of that weekend, it's probably been the busiest media-related weekend I've had since I've been doing this, but I'm not complaining. I'm just explaining. Yeah.
Yeah, and I want to get into that more with you as the show progresses and hear about your week for sure. So I want to give out the phone numbers and email so we can encourage listener interaction. The phone number for you to give us a call if you're live streaming the show is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on the switchboard, and we know you want to be on the show. And we welcome new callers, first-time callers, returning callers who've been away a while. You're all welcome. And, of course, our regulars. And you can also email us, if that works better for you, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That is also the email to use to ask a question or bring up a topic for Jason Powell and me to cover tomorrow on the Blue Logo Show, the Tuesday flagship, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, Cam, let's just get to calls here. I'm sure some people have the game on in the background. We are going to warn people, if you're listening to us live and tape the game, we'll probably make references to what's happening. So I don't want to ruin it for you if you're like, I'm going to watch Raw, listen to Wade and Cam, and then watch the game on DVR. If that is your priority list, you probably don't care as much about spoilers because, you know, you've made that order. But as someone who watches sports on delay a lot, I want to give people fair warning. We probably will make reference to what's going on here. Okay, so let's begin phone calls with in London, Ontario. This may be someone who doesn't care about the NCAA championship, men's basketball championship game. How you doing, Hinton?
I could care less for it. So good choice, good choice. I'm not going to bring up football here.
Yeah.
Hey guys, this is the first Raw that I've seen in months or maybe years, actually. Like a full Raw show.
Yeah,
and I agree with your comments about Cody. I think that this promo, I'm like, you know, I'm always on the Dynamite post shows, right? And where was this guy on AEW? Like, the crowd would have been behind him if we got this promo or something like this. It's so frustrating. And I mean, this sort of validates all the frustration that we spent on those Dynamite post shows. To be honest with you, it's just, he has it in him. It's just.
Yeah,
AEW is just so hell bent on, no, we don't script. We don't edit, right? If we do it, then we'll lose our talent to WWE. And they've just got to stop being scared of that. What did you – I didn't listen to your full opening monologue. Did you – what did you think of the Seth Rollins handshake at the end where he's still laughing heelishly, but, you know, he's showing his respect?
I didn't think a lot of it, and I didn't talk about it yet because I just am not sure what to make of it, to be honest. I don't I'm not sure what to make of it. You know, it could be a babyface turn. It could be setting Cody up for, you know, chicanery and trickery in a turn. It could be nothing more than a sort of meta moment of, hey, welcome home, says a guy like Seth who's accepting that, you know, Cody. What did you make of it, Cam?
Yeah, I think it's Rocky I, some of it. When Apollo told Rocky is not going to be a rematch, I think it's that, okay, clearly you belong here. Like, clearly, and I think I said it earlier, too. You know, Cody was a surprise in storyline. He's not somebody Seth could prepare for beforehand, got the best of Seth. But I think it's Seth saying, okay, now we know that you're here. No problem with you, but now I see you coming. And so once you're not a surprise anymore, once that wears off and you got to fit back in, that's when it gets serious. That's when it gets real. So, yeah, I think it was sportsmanship. I think that it was, Seth showing the proper respect but also explaining that it only gets harder from here. Like, I did like that, him being respected as a peer, not an outsider right away.
Hint, what did you make of it?
I think the feud's just going to continue a while. I mean, you know, this is just what WWE does, right? They just they cycle the same people through multiple matches, and you know, Cody's not challenging Reigns anytime soon. He might, you know, I think Drew McIntyre is probably gonna get that role on SmackDown. So Cody needs something to do, and Seth Rollins is it. Like, he's the guy that, you know, people, he's like what Kane was back in 2003, 2004. He's like this gatekeeper type of heel who you kind of overcome to, I guess, get to the next level. So, you know, we'll probably get another match at WrestleMania Backlash. And then we'll see, I suppose. I want to move on to Edge. I like this. I liked his entrance. The first time I heard this new music of his, I didn't watch his WrestleMania match. I only caught WrestleMania kind of in patches. I watched most of it, but that was one match that I sort of skipped. And I liked his entrance. Like, the last time I remember seeing him was Royal Rumble. He was with his wife, and like, this feels, I heard on your podcast, you said it was very sudden, and I agree with that. But, you know, if we just accept that this is who he is, it's a nice character. I'm just curious why Damian Priest, of all people, when Edge could be using his cachet to, you know, run a faction that uplifts younger, sort of more upcoming talent. I don't know who those would be per se, because I haven't really paid that much attention to WWE recently, but what do you make of this new pairing? Do you think it has a realistic potential to recruit younger talents, or is it just an Edge Priest thing?
I think they're going to add more. I think, you know, they're on a pretty consistent journey here in WWE camp to get Damian Priest over, to find what it takes for Priest to get to the next stage of being a star that they can build more around. And I think Edge might help get him there. I'm not sure. I'm not into this Edge character a ton. I'm not, like, you know, fiercely against it. I just don't buy it. I think we've just seen too much of the real Adam Copeland, and I think the transition to this phase was more out of, hey, let's add a little something extra to the AJ storyline rather than some organic evolution of the journey that Edge Adam Copeland has been on in front of our very eyes since his return. So I'm just not buying it. It feels like it's, you know, based on what will be a good performance and fun for him to perform. But it's early yet, but if it helps get Priest over, I'm for that, because I'd like anyone they've invested as much as they have in Priest to, you know, have that pay off in some way. But there is a reason Priest is now kind of needing Edge, and that is there's some shortcomings there that have always been there. Remember Todd Martin talking about how, you know, he's of the belief that if you, you know, don't really get over in one territory, one promotion, one area, it's not often that you go somewhere else and your skill set is just going to work better there, or the promoter's going to do something to fix it. Sometimes you just don't have some intangible, and it just that persists wherever you go. And I'm not declaring that's the case with Priest, but there's, you know, that's worth discussing and considering the possibility of. And so maybe pairing him with Edge takes him to makes up for something that he has been lacking, that's been hard for people to put their finger on. So those are my thoughts. Cam, how about you?
Yeah, I was actually speaking with somebody earlier who is kind of in his camp, and one thing that they said that he's also kind of admitted to is he doesn't really push back a lot on the things that they give him storyline-wise. He just, you know, kind of rolls with it, which ain't the worst thing in the world. A lot of times it's how you keep a job, right? But I do think that, like, Edge doing this quasi-suit Jericho thing, even though he can pull it off, I don't think it's helping him a whole lot. And in turn, I don't think being associated with that all of a sudden makes you a bigger deal, you know? We talk about the U.S. title and IC titles in their state now, but, you know, his run was a really good one. And you wish they could have just kind of naturally transitioned him to the main event from there. You know, the crowd loves Edge. I don't think they're going to go dead on Edge. This adds a new layer to it. I mean, I'm also not a big fan of it, but I think that in the same way that all of a sudden, you know, MVP is going to be Omos's manager to kind of, you know, to speak for him in a way that Omos is not doing himself, I wish that that was more the ride that Priest was on. Because not that he's a bad talker, I think he's way too conversational for the type of conversation they want to have, for the way that they want their people to speak. I think he's good. I think he's fun. But I think his shortcoming is kind of that wrestling communication back and forth with an opponent. So we'll see where this goes. But, yeah, I'm not a huge fan of it either right now.
Yeah. All right, I'll throw back to him for any follow-up or another topic.
Yeah, good points about Priest. I largely agree with that. There's a couple things that sort of reminded me why I watch WWS these days. First of all, that was that Carmella thing with Zelina Vega, which I didn't understand at all. Who am I supposed to root for? They're both unlikable, and it's so high school-y, it's so tacky, the way they act those segments out, the way they script these segments. I just completely rolled my eyes to that. And then Veer Mahan, who, you know, as an Indian myself, I always look forward to, you know, Indian wrestlers debuting. I've never seen WWE do well to represent not only Indian culture, but just Indian wrestlers ever. Like, they're all heels, and their Indianness makes them heels. And, hey, if they happen to be big, they're going to grunt, they're going to snort, they're going to come across like this, you know, almost like a colonialist perspective of like a primitive tribesman. And I really, that just really turned me off. What do you guys know about Veer's sort of background prior to WWE, or maybe like whatever he's done in developmental? What do you think his prospects are in this company?
Cam, go ahead.
Well, the super interesting thing, you ever got a perfect question and you actually know what's going on? This is great. The super interesting thing about Veer is he was actually like an amateur baseball player. I think he was a pitcher. Smaller frame, clean shaven, was pretty talented. Ended up not doing that and coming to WWE. So, I mean, he's not – and this is not a bad analogy, but, like, I can only think about it how they used to treat, like, quote-unquote African wrestlers. He's not a guy from the bush, for lack of a better way of saying it. Like, even if you check his social media, he's guy in suit, super suave. Like, that's who he is. And I think, you know, as cool as some of the stuff Vince did was on Sunday – he's still a 77-year-old white guy who is going to, at times, go to the lowest common denominator as far as what he thinks people will identify with. Even though we're talking to you, of course you know your culture is way more layered than what you're getting credit for, and completely understand why that turns you off. What I hope is that the fact that people know that he's a guy who was doing – it's weird to say baseball is traditionally American, but it kind of is. If somebody who's doing more traditional stuff and can be that, I hope that the character eventually slides over to that, because like even Veer's social media presence, it's pretty face. Like, he does stuff that you would want cool guys to do. I think it's going to be some time, but I would say maybe have some patience, because I do think he's way more relatable. I think it's just going to be something that has to play out.
And, you know, this is WWE's history hitting, and it's a good point to bring up. You know, Vince McMahon sees somebody, and instead of understanding them in a way that isn't, 30 years out of date, and even then not particularly worldly, you know, he goes with that. And I was an advocate for Veer coming in as a babyface and being intense, but, you know, being more grounded in who he really is instead of the stereotype. I mean, he's a vegetarian. Like, his character is not going to be a vegetarian, but he's a vegetarian because he felt bad when some people were chasing a chicken one day and trying to kill it for food. And it's like, that's not going to be on Corey Gray's bullet points, or not Corey, but Jimmy Smith's list of bullet points to bring up about why he's so... You know, why he's such a savage and blah, blah, blah. Like, the often Sika back in the day when they just chew fish during their promos, you know, like whole fish. So, yeah, it'd be nice. It would be nice. And I think we should continue to hold Vince McMahon and pro wrestling in general accountable when they kind of take the path of least resistance and go with stereotypes like this. I'm curious to see if he gets over. You know, I mean, this is the reality of how he's being presented. I didn't get the sense that there was, like, a hook-like – you know, response for him coming out in front of this crowd. But as Cam, you mentioned at the top of the show, this could have been a pretty burned out crowd tonight. But I think Spears got to show people, you know, vignette after vignette, delay after delay, doesn't mean people are going to necessarily pop for you. He's got to earn their interest, and he hasn't done that yet. Yeah. All right, Hinton, back to you. Anything you want to close with?
Yeah, fair points on that. I also heard Mike Myers talk about him briefly on the, I think, the SmackDown post show. He wasn't really excited about his ring work per se. So, and I'll be checking in just because I, you know, just as an Indian, I just sort of have a vested interest in it. But, you know, given what they did with Kali, being what they did with Mahal, and of course Kali, some of it was his fault, but, you know, you can still present a gimmick better. You know, you can still accentuate someone's strengths a bit better, I think. And then Mahal and now this guy is just a little eye rolling. What did you make of? I guess I'll knock this topic out as well. The Zelina Vega and what's her name, Carmella little fiasco there. Have they been a team for a while? Is this like is this kind of a big deal for the women's mid card?
No, no. They've been a team for a little while, and they didn't get along because Carmella was worried about her upcoming wedding to Corey Graves and social media instead of paying attention to their strategy. But Selena was kind of a jerk about it. And no, you know, people don't really care that they've broken up, and they don't really have a favorite to choose sides with because they're both very unlikable. And there's not a lot of nuance here to discuss. And it's, Cam,
no,
I mean, sure. There was no one there. Do you think they're trying to frame one of them as more sympathetic than the other, or is it just like, you know, good riddance to both that they just tear each other apart?
We're just being catty. Like, I don't think we're supposed to root for either of them really in this situation. I think it's a way to break up two heels but still have two singles heels on the roster. So, no, I do not think that. I think it's weird for them to have been so excited about Carmella and Corey Graves' YouTube show, but then to also be playing it off for what we actually know it is now after a few weeks. Like, to make it seem like cartoonish and corny when that's what it is. So, no, I think we're supposed to dislike them both. And now we have eventually two contenders for Bianca, I think.
All right, very good. Hinton, appreciate it. Good hear from you.
Perfect. Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Have a good night.
Yep, you too. All right, we're going to go next to William in San Diego. You can also get in line on our phone lines if you want, especially if you just finished watching the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship conclude. Our number is 347-215-8558. We'd love to hear from you. 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com, either if you're listening to our live stream or in anticipation of tomorrow's recording of the Wade Keller flagship with Jason Powell. All right, William, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind tonight about Raw?
Hey, guys. Thank you for taking my call. actually a little tired here after the long weekend of wrestling. I'm actually still here in Dallas. Just sitting here in my car waiting for traffic to get lighter. So, I don't know if you guys needed like an on-site correspondent or something, or I do have some questions.
Let's do it.
So up to you guys.
Yeah, well, go ahead and talk about being on-site. One of Cam's observations at the top of the show was he thought that the crowd maybe seemed burned out from, you know, the last 2-3 days and everything going on and didn't bring as much energy as they might have if they had, gone to a new city. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, I don't know if it was being burned out or if it was, the quality of the show itself. I did kind of walk in myself. I was more tired yesterday, actually, than I was today. I would like that Edge match. I think objectively, like I was sitting there, like watching it and thinking, man, I would probably be really good, really into this because it does look kind of good. But I like had so much trouble for whatever reason, like trying to stay awake. And it wasn't until like they got to those close finish at the end that adrenaline started hitting me, and I like got awake again for the Pat McAfee match and that main event. But tonight, I walked in with a little more energy and excitement, and I think I heard you mention like briefly during the intro that the show barely lived up to the the moniker of the Raw after Mania, that kind of legacy. I think this anecdotal, but I was like in the restrooms and I overheard some people like talking to like two strangers. One of them was asking, man, is it me or, you know, is this Raw after Mania just kind of lacking a little? And one of them was like agreeing with them. So I do think that the quality of the show, I think people were expecting a little more. I think the Cody promo was definitely a highlight for the people here. And, everyone enjoyed booing Kevin Owens, and they had some fun with the whole Ezekiel thing, the Elias thing, and that last promo with Roman Reigns. Everyone acknowledged him, but I think people were expecting more surprises, like maybe something like a Bayley or an Oscar or something, someone returning.
Yeah, I think in the fact, again, I keep saying it, but going up against a big college basketball game, WWE might have decided to hold back a little bit and spread things out, and I'm fine with that. I think having Cody and Veer, having Roman appear, having Bianca appear, you know, I just think there was just enough for this to not feel like a show that was just phoned in and not worthwhile and that they were saving everything for next week. But, you know, sometimes the moments in the Raw after Mania came due to fans booing Roman Reigns for 10 straight minutes on TV and, you know, unexpected things or things, I don't know, you know, that weren't really things WWE had control of. So I thought this was fine. I don't want them to just feel like they have to do something just crazy every year. And given the timing of the basketball game, it probably isn't prudent to do that if this is going to be something that happens again in the future.
Yeah, I think it was fine.
And I would just say, okay,
go ahead, Cam.
I do think that having Roman come out and talk about what he's going to say on Friday makes you think more, okay, maybe they know, like, there's some things they can do tonight, but they can really lean into it Friday and pop a big rating on Fox. If that's where you get maybe a few more of the surprises, maybe some more returns, I could absolutely see that, then, you know, having an extra show to do that and announcing that you're going to really hear something important on that show.
Yep. I agree. I think Reigns going, you know, tune in Friday. I mean, that's going to leave a bit of a sour taste in people's mouths who attended wanting to see, you know, things happen. And it, I get why they did it. Man, if I'm Roman, though, and WWE, I just don't know that I script that line overtly like that, because it does sort of feel like they're punting and saying, thanks for coming, but the real news is Friday. I don't know. I think it's implied he'll be on, you know, the announcers can say Roman is scheduled for SmackDown on Friday, too, but don't make it seem like Roman is, you know, saying, hey, thanks for showing up, but the real important stuff coming up later. William, back to you, just in terms of the reaction to Cody in the building. Just talk about that. Talk about what your sense of the emotional investment, the passion, the reaction to him? Was there anyone who seemed to think, why is this guy a big deal? Was there anyone who was against him? What was the vibe in the building?
Yeah, people were going crazy for him. I would say that he probably got the biggest reaction, you know, him being like the first big star coming out at the start of the show, and people were like invested in that promo. These are smarter fans than usual, like more hardcore. So they know about, you know, like legends like the American Dream. They know about his story. They know, even if he didn't like explicitly talk about AEW, they know like that what he's alluding to. So yeah, people like seem really invested in him, and it's going to be interesting seeing like how other more casual audiences react going forward.
Cam, go ahead and jump in with a question for William, who attended.
So I know you were at the live show too. Somebody in the Twitch chat also said that they had like Cody and KO at the end of the show. Do you feel like, and this is kind of adding on to what you were saying, do you feel like the people there feel like Cody is a main eventer at this point? Like, is that the reaction, the response, the conversation in the crowd about him, is it something that's believable right away, or do you think that's going to take some time based on what you were hearing?
You know, at least for this crowd, I do think that people were ready for it. When he came out, when Roman came out at the end and he was talking about what's next for the title or something, I think he said something like that. I heard like a couple people saying, you know, Cody, some whispers of Cody there. And when Cody talked about, you know, wanting to fulfill his father's, I guess, wish, people like really bought into it, and they were excited about that. And, you know, him coming out, I think what speaks even louder is that, during the show, Kevin Owens came out and he cut a promo about how he was challenging Cody for the main event, the quote unquote main event dark match. Usually, I've been to a lot of shows where they'll do the dark match like right after whatever, after we go off the air, and people are just like ready to get out of the building and try to beat everyone and, you know, beat the traffic. Here, you know, there were a few people leaving and getting out of here, but for the most part, people seem really interested in that match and staying there, and he still had the crowd support there at that match.
William, talk about the reaction to Veer. It didn't seem like this big emotional release and pop for like, oh, he's finally here and we're here to see this moment. How did it come across in the building? Was it complete disinterest or what?
Maybe I'm projecting a little bit. It seemed like an ironic pop. You know, like they've been teasing this debut for months. And, it finally happening. I think people, it became kind of like a meme. So I think people were into it in that kind of jokey kind of way. And once he attacked Dominic and Ray, he did get some heat. And I guess my answer is that maybe it started kind of like jokey, but once he attacked Ray and Dominic, the people were willing to like play along and boo him.
Talk about the return of Elias, allegedly, or the debut of his younger brother.
People were having a lot of fun with that, like chanting about like Europe. You know, they obviously knew that or assumed that he was Elias. I don't know where these allegations are coming from. He said himself that it's Ezekiel. People were having a lot of fun with it. I don't know that they like him like as a face, as his character. I don't know what their plan is going forward. Like, are they just going to like slowly drop that, all the references to Elias, or are we going to get some explanation later, like as to why he felt like he needed to drop the Elias thing, and it, you know, is even going to acknowledge that he was Elias at some point? Because yeah, that's going to be kind of weird.
Yeah, we can talk more about that as it goes on. The reaction to Bron Breakker. Talk about that in the building. Was there excitement seeing him as a rising star in NXT, or did it seem like people didn't know who he was or didn't care?
Yeah, I think this is kind of like a good way to, like, a good indication of just how NXT has, like, fallen out of favor with a lot of the hardcore fans. Because usually, you know, the big NXT champion or the big NXT star coming out at the Raw after Mania and making his debut would be, like, a big thing, met with, like, big cheers and a big reception. But here it was, I don't know, people were kind of quiet. I think they got into the show, the match more as it went. But at first it was just kind of quiet. There were like a few people doing like the woo thing. I guess that's like his chant. I don't really watch much NXT, so I wouldn't know. But,
it's what Rick Steiner did back in 1989.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha. But yeah, I think they people got more into it as it went along, but at the very start, it wasn't like this huge, like, oh my God, yeah. And some people were like trying to start an NXT chant, but it never like really caught on. So I think that like that tells you like exactly how little like NXT, you know, matters to these sort of fans nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Cam, anything else you want to ask?
What I'm curious about, and I think it was a very good reaction, but I feel like Bobby Lashley and Bianca Belair, I feel like Bianca's been a babyface ever since she's been on the main roster. I also feel like Lashley's getting a really good babyface response. The way people were talking about them when they came out, just what was that conversation like? What was the feeling like? I'm always curious. Kind of about that section of wrestling. So yeah, how was that?
Yeah, Bianca got a pretty good pop when she came out. During her promo, there were some parts where it's kind of hard to hear what she was saying, because sometimes wrestlers will come out and they'll do these promos where they kind of talk into the mic rather than like project. And it's not really, you know, the sound system isn't always the best at these arenas. So it was kind of hard to listen to her, and I think there were some moments where she was kind of losing the crowd, and there were a few pockets in the crowd of people who were trying to start a We Want Becky chant. I think for the most part she was over with the crowd, but I did hear some, like, a few pockets of boos here and there, and even when she mentioned, like, that she was going to take new challengers or whatever, like, there were some Becky chants, so I think a lot of people wanted to see Becky, but it wasn't like overwhelming. I think if this was like a more casual arena, like I don't know, like San Diego or something, I think she would have gotten more universally well received. And for right. Bobby Lashley, he came out and he didn't get like a huge pop when he came out, but once he was in that ring, he got some very loud Bobby chants. And when MVP turned on him, that was like a big, that got him a lot of heat. And people are behind Bobby Lashley.
Who got the best reactions of the night overall? Just, you know, who seemed like they were the stars that people were there to see or react to?
I would say Cody was number one, and he definitely had that advantage of being the first one to come out. I think Roman Reigns would be second. Randy Orton got a very loud pop when he did that hot tag during the tag match. I would throw Sasha in that conversation, maybe in like the top five, but not like the most over. And I think there was someone else, but I forget now.
And anything that surprised you in terms of crowd reaction? Or anything that just kind of stood out as a surprise in general on the show?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was that thing I mentioned about Bianca, but we already covered that. Not anything off the top of my head. I think we went through everything.
Yeah. Cool. So is there anything you want to bring up otherwise, other than being the on-site correspondent?
Yeah. So with Rhea and Liv Morgan, what do you guys think about that whole thing? Does it seem like Rhea's going to be the one to turn on Liv? Is that a good idea? I know that Bianca obviously needs more opponents than Becky, and I don't think that, you know, her feuding against Carmella or Selena is really going to do anything, and we've already seen her fighting Doudrop a bunch, so Rhea is definitely a good option for her for if they need another heel on that roster. But at the same time, I think Rhea got a pretty good reaction tonight. She was getting a lot of Rhea chants. So, you know, it's one of those things like, do you really want to turn her for if you need someone for Bianca? What do you guys think? Like, is that even the direction they're heading at?
Yeah. It was a little weird. You know, Ripley's frustrated with a loss, then talks management into giving them, despite losing, a title match, which is just sort of like whatever. And then Liv is like, well, that makes up for you being, you know, abandoning me in the ring and blaming me for a loss. I don't think it doesn't come across as a particularly compelling or well-told story structurally. So it's kind of hard to then read into, you know, read the tea leaves and try to figure out what they're doing. But I guess they could go either direction in terms of who turns on whom. I mean, I think Liv will look like a real sucker if she trusts Ripley and Ripley turns on her, but it could maybe go the other way where Ripley just, you know, overreacted, admitted it, worked hard to get them a second chance, and then Liv Morgan was unforgiving. Cam, what do you think? Where do you think this is going or might go?
I hate to talk about it like it's so obvious. I'm just like, you know, Rhea has that. She's adjusted her look so much over time. She got those big, broad shoulders. You just kind of see her as a heel. I would just like a clean split and let them go do their thing. Like, I would love that. I don't know how weird that sounds, but you know, Liv has, you know, her build is smaller. She's not like Becky, who's super ring general, who can play both sides because she can have that mean streak in her. I think Liv's still figuring it out. I'd love to see them just go to different brands and not have to be like a full nasty split. I think that works because I've said this for a couple of years. The money, the future money is in Bianca and Rhea. Like, they are so similar, but at the same time, so different. That's a great feud that you can run next WrestleMania. So I'd love to see them split, but I don't want to see any more women look dumb on the roster. But I also think that with Naomi and Sasha having the tag titles, they're going to get some good matches, but we're going to see these women shuffled around into new teams. Like, that's coming. So yeah, I just think they end up going to do something else. I don't think it's a long, drawn-out thing. But, yeah, I do think Rhea comes out as a heel because they've been adjusting her look slowly but surely to look like that. So, yeah, I think that's what's coming. And then you can have Liv be a babyface on SmackDown, which I think would be just fine for her.
All right. William, what else for us, if anything?
What do you guys think about MVP turning on Lashley? I do think that Lashley has the mic skills to be on his own, but I don't know that I do think that having MVP was a plus for him. Like, it made him look like a bigger deal. Kind of like how, you know, I remember Roman was without Paul Heyman for like a month or so, and it felt like he was missing something important, like a big part of what made him look like a big deal. And I do fear that this could have similar effects with Lashley, and also because I think Lashley can do okay, but he does have his moments where he kind of does suffer out there when he has to like cut a promo or something, and I don't know that sacrificing that just to give something to Omos is like the direction that I would personally go.
I think this makes sense. I think fans are ready to embrace Lashley as a babyface, and I don't think MVP fits with Lashley as a babyface as much as Omos needs a spokesperson, and it gives MVP someone fresh to work with who he can actually give a boost to, because I don't think this was Lashley's best night. I think some wrestlers were tired too, by the way. But I like MVP having somebody new to work with, and I like Lashley on his own. I think baby, you know, I mean, it wouldn't have been awful, Cam, if MVP stayed with Lashley as a babyface team. But I just don't think that's super exciting for MVP to imagine being a babyface manager, you know, rah, rah, my guy Bobby. I think there's more to do as a manager in pro wrestling when you're a heel. What do you think?
I think that he put Lashley in a position to win. Like, we don't need to hear a lot from Lashley at this point. MVP kind of solidified him as a big deal, had him out there in suits. They were super important. Lashley doesn't have to cut the long promo. Like, he's not – you can't occupy the space that Brock operates. Brock is a super, super unique thing. You know, was in the game 5 or 6 years before Lashley, had contemporaries like Rock that – you know, is his resume is different than Bobby. But when we start talking about, like, athleticism, intensity, and what you can actually do in ring, they're not super different. But I do think that MVP, treating Bobby Lashley like the prize fighter, like the big deal that he is, put Bobby Lashley in the position like Shelton Benjamin never really got to without a manager. You know, and there's other guys that fit that mold. But, no, I think that they explored and did just about everything that they can do together. I think that it ran its course. There was nothing more for MVP to do to Bobby Lashley. But again, Bobby Lashley getting that really good reaction, and his reaction was good WrestleMania when he defended against Drew. Like, it's been good for him for a while. I think the job of him having a manager, we're exactly where we need to be, and he can do a babyface run. Like, being a big, strong guy is always going to work. Having the explosion and athleticism he does is going to work. I think that they split them at the right time, because I think Omos, even though I found out this weekend just how charismatic he actually is, for what they need him to do, I think that a manager is going to serve him best, and MVP is absolutely the best guy to do that. So, yeah.
All right, William, anything else?
One final topic, and then I'll let you guys get to other callers or emailers. What do you guys think is next for Becky? Are we going to run Bianca. Are we going to run Becky and Bianca again, or is she going to move on to other competitors? That's everything I had. Thank you guys for taking the call. Have a good one.
Thanks. Appreciate it, bud. Cam, what do you think is next? Did you get any sense of things from Bianca's promo?
I feel like Becky is – well, first of all, Bianca coming out with a black eye is one of the coolest visuals you'll ever see. Like, because they – I'm not saying a woman has never had, like, a bruise or anything in wrestling, but the intensity of what her and Becky did, how hell-bent Becky was on getting past Bianca, and the resentment that she's had for her for 6, 7, 8, 9 months – is amazing. I really think it's one of the best stories they've told, even if it got off to a funny start. I don't see them running it back, though, because I think that Becky's a bigger deal than that. I think that Becky is in that here's a few months off wheelhouse and comes back to do something different. Or even if she goes after Bianca, it's not a month after they had this epic match. I think it's going to be some time between them. But
yeah.
Who does she face next?
Exactly.
I mean,
yep.
There's Shayna there. There's always Natalya. Like, there's always good hand Natalya who's going to put out a good match. I don't think they go Doudrop so soon unless she racks up some wins, because they've done that one maybe a few too many times. But, yeah, I think that you'll probably see her with somebody else over the summer, even if they go back to Becky later.
What about Bayley?
So Bayley has been – I mean, Bayley's been healthy. She's been a healthy scratch for a few months. I've talked to people. Bayley's in very good spirits. Like everything's good with her. I don't know if Bayley comes back as a heel, though. I really don't. That's the thing.
That's my thing, too, yeah.
Guess we'll have to see. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, very good. Let's jump to Kyle in Baltimore next year. There you are. Kyle, welcome to the show. What'd you think of Raw tonight?
So I just wanted to talk about the I guess two things that I was thinking about was first was Sasha and Naomi, them being tag team champions. I think was cool. I expected them to win, and it was cool to see Sasha winning her WrestleMania for first time. So that was a cool moment from last night. And for tonight in general, I was excited for this match with them and Rhea and Liv, but then this whole weird thing with her and with Rhea and Liv, I'm sure that they're going to break up next week and have probably Rhea go after be a heel, go after Bianca, which is fine. And so I think for me though, I was just thinking watching this from the Sasha Naomi scene and then with Bianca Belair, I think Bianca is with Bianca her having that swollen eye from her match with Becky on Saturday, it was interesting for I'm wondering if she's gonna when she's gonna be cleared to wrestle because of that injury. Her eye was like swollen and super shut still compared to her right eye to her left eye. I was like, oh. So I don't know what she'll be wrestling again, but hopefully it'll be soon and not that serious. I was thinking to her, where do you go from here with Bianca if she's going to I would think it'll be Rhea Ripley because of big. I think she's going to be turning heel next week. Then probably go after Bianca Belair. If Becky's not going to be around for a while, which would be weird. I'm still feeling because Becky lost, but whatever, it was unexpected, but still. So what do you think about that? It'll be Bianca and Rhea in the near future. If Becky isn't going to come back, or even if Bayley doesn't come back either, I think it would be. At least right away, be Rhea Ripley at some in the summer, in July or whatever.
But Cam, how close is Rhea Ripley to being someone that they could plug in and put in that level at that level?
I mean, I think she's there. Like, you know, she's literally had a title match with Charlotte at WrestleMania. You know what I mean? I think she's polished. I think that. Again, her and Bianca are two sides of the same coin. You never want to just say, like, Rock and Austin because, you know, very few people are that. But I think when you have these two individuals who are very athletic, have great looks, can do heel or face, you can put them on any of these talk shows that you want, and they'll immediately jump off the screen. I think she's there. I just think that I'd like to have her do the mean streak thing, run through people for a few months before they do that. But, like, yeah, they've literally told the story of her being her and Bianca, the last two in the Rumble last year. Like, she's right there. She's ready to pop. I think that they're very comparable in their reactions and their trajectories. I think they can plug her in at any time. I would love to see them actually build her up before they do that, though.
That was just my thought with having just that from being having you know with that I still think that they'll go back to Becky at some point, I would think, because that's what they do anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
not ruling out
your backlash, so
exactly. I mean, that's what I'm not ruling out she comes back, but it'd be nice to see not a complete rerun or even they have two nights to choose from of matches to kind of rebook. But I hope, you don't want WrestleMania backlash to feel like WrestleMania replay or rewind.
I
think people are ready to move forward and see some fresh. I mean, there's some unfinished business, but, and we could go through the whole card and go, rank them in terms of which feuds most should end and which ones have to end versus which ones maybe they can get another pay-per-view out of. But, they could get more out of Becky Bianca, but I'm ready to see Bianca against somebody fresh. It's not a super deep roster and they split it into two brands. So, if it's not Bianca against Becky, then they got to get somebody ready for Becky and somebody ready for Bianca. Cause you can't have Becky not doing something important. She's too valuable.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've been more a fan of Becky and Sasha both being when it's their debut. It's like both of them, they're my favorite, no matter what happens with them. So they should be, they're both high level. And then it was Sasha and Naomi winning the titles last night. It was cool to see Sasha winning at WrestleMania finally after having her lose every single time at WrestleMania. It was a cool emotional moment for her when she won. And so I guess what I'm thinking is that now that they are the tag team champions, you know, they said they want to make it important, but it's only so much they can do because the tag team division is so super weak, and it's going to be that makes me kind of worried, Sasha should, I said this multiple times, and everybody's like kind of agreed that she should be really facing Charlotte for the championship and not an Emilia's tag team, and especially because even after Saturday, that should have been Sasha and Charlotte, because that match at WrestleMania sucked with Charlotte and Ronda. I didn't care. And so, we'll just see what happens with that with Sasha and Naomi as tag team champions. I'm sure they'll do the best they can, but there's only so much they could do. We'll see what that. I think my last thing I'll talk about is Roman Reigns and him now being a double champion. I know this is what people wanted, so here we are. He's going to be September. For him going to be on both shows now, we'll see how long that will last and being a double champion. You know, how long, you know, I don't know. I think it's going to be really, I don't see him losing the title anytime soon. I would think he's going to have to relinquish the championship. Even if he does that, that's just so not good. And even his match at WrestleMania wasn't that good neither. It was a bad match. And I don't know what it is with Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns at WrestleMania where they can't have a really good wrestling match. I don't know why that is. First at 2018 and then last night. So I don't know what that's all about. But I don't know. With Roman Reigns and if it's going to be Cody Rhodes, I still think it's just, I don't know. I think it's kind of, I'm kind of glad they're not doing it now. They're kind of still doing his thing with Seth Rollins. And I'm actually surprised he actually got a really big reaction. I'm going all over the place again. Look, what do I know, I guess? I think people just want something new, and he's doing his new character thing, which is fine. If he's going to do his thing with Seth Rollins still, which is fine. If the end result is Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, that would be interesting. I know if that's going to be like perhaps for like SummerSlam, it'll be interesting. It'll be like, I don't know. It's going to take a long time for me personally to find Cody Rhodes a big time star. You know, his thing talking about his father passing, and he was to live on his legacy. Which could be interesting to see what that is going to transpire to how he's going to do that the next few months and in the story he's trying to tell when he's there. But I guess for me it'll take a long time to see him as a top star on the same level as Roman Reigns if they wrestle each other at SummerSlam or whatever. But that's just it. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Kyle. Cam, your thoughts on any of that?
So I don't think like the Roman-Brock matches have been bad. I think that they are chasing a certain aesthetic, but I also think that there's – when you say a match is the biggest main event of all time, and it involves two parties where a segment of the audience is burned out on the both of them, and the amount of main events they've had, the amount of time they've occupied the main event scene, I think that you set up impossible expectations. And it looks like, you know, Roman dislocated his shoulder, which did kind of lead to a less than ideal finish, but I liked it.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good. I think we, you know, the room of people we were in really enjoyed it. The people who were there seemed to really enjoy it. But I'm certainly not discrediting how he feels at all, because, again, I understand where that sentiment comes from. But I think that it's exactly what, you know, those guys should be doing. I was there. I didn't see them in California, but I did see them in New Orleans when I felt like they went with the wrong result, which I think detracted from the match overall. But, no, I think that those two together are great. I do think it felt like a big deal. You know, when you got two big strong guys in there like that, these things are going to happen, like injuries. But no, I didn't feel like I was let down because of the actual quality of what happened. I felt like they had to take it home faster than they would have because, you know, it's not just like a guy dislocated his shoulder and was like at the job. He dislocated his shoulder against a guy who's almost 300 pounds. And so there's literally less that you can do from that point going forward. But no, I left out of that. You got one of the best visuals that you'll ever see. Roman with the two titles in the camera is going to be a gift for the rest of forever. So I was not disappointed in the main event. I think that whatever Audible was called, it was still satisfying. But I don't discredit how he feels about it. I just think that because it's a thing we've had so many times, it's easier to dissect. But I think it standing on its own still really did work.
Yeah, yeah. And at the time, I defended the finish if that was the planned finish. You know, you go from a near tap out, Paul Heyman helping avoid that, to that one sudden kind of RKO-esque move that can come out of nowhere for a quick win. I think WWE has overdone the near fall kick out, finisher, near fall kick. Like, they've done that to an extreme. And I think this sort of hits the reset button and tells fans, anytime they do this, be ready. You're not going to necessarily see six finishers before the actual finish. Would it have made for a better match if they had done that in the moment? Well, yeah. But is there some benefit to the way that it played out, planned or not? Yeah, I think there is. I think people now go, it's not predictable when a match ends. So, Roman Reigns having two titles, Cody being on Raw, it's kind of interesting because Cody's on Raw. He's declared he wants the championship. Reigns is going to go declare what he's going to do on SmackDown. If he, who knows what his situation is with his shoulder. But if he goes into a feud with Drew McIntyre right away and they're scheduled at least to help sell tickets, that's a match that's being advertised for upcoming events. Then does Cody, say, I want to win the WWE championship, and he beats Reigns to take that title and bring it back to Raw? Is that a story that they're laying the groundwork for? Maybe. But I don't know. I mean, I think it is too soon to narrow it down to just one possibility.
Yeah. I mean, my inclination is Roman finds a sassy way to give it up, to give up the WWE title. And then that becomes a focal point of wherever they're going on Raw, just because, I mean, not that he can't pull double duty. I think that where I always thought it would be a good idea to have one traveling champion, I don't trust them to tell that story across two shows. I think they've tried to do that, and it hasn't really worked. I also think that having one world champion is a great chance to elevate the IC and US titles, but they have not showed interest in that either. So I really do think that we get, what happened with Brock, where, I'm only defending the title on this show. That title can go over there. People can compete over it. Because even though in the moment it seemed like Brock was doing the world title a disservice by only being WWE champion, we forgot about it so fast. Like, it literally did not devalue that belt. Then you had Triple H on the other side, and he's off to the races immediately, right? But, I think Roman finds a way to say that he did what he needed to do because he wanted to do it against Brock, not because he was concerned about being a double champion. And so I relinquish this title. You can do what you want with it. This is my yard over here. Acknowledge me over here. And you guys can do what you want. And then immediately it's like that one segment didn't happen to where it seemed like he devalued it. And guys on Raw are all of a sudden competing for the richest prize in the business.
All right. Very good. Let's, I think we've got somebody who – I want to talk more broadly about the whole weekend. And Cam, I know you can speak to that. I believe we have Zach from Arkansas who also attended a WrestleMania over the weekend. And so, Zach, is this you? And welcome.
Yes, yeah, this is Zach.
Okay, cool. Thanks for your patience. So I kind of want to just talk to both of you about – the greater experience that you had over WrestleMania weekend and broaden it away from just Raw, the way I think we have to a degree already. So, Zach, welcome. And just tell me a little bit about how you feel about – first of all, talk about what you did, what you attended, and how you're feeling here on Monday night now that you can kind of maybe exhale a little bit.
Yeah. I drove up on Saturday to just – strictly go to the WrestleMania. I actually ended up just having night one tickets, and I guess once the card kind of came out, and I wasn't exactly sure what was going to be on what day, so I just went ahead and purchased the second day as well, just to make sure that I was able to kind of get the full brunt of what WrestleMania had to offer. So I ended up, you know, going to both nights, and that was really all I was able to actually have time to do. I wanted to go to WrestleCon, but it just didn't work out for my job and me having to drive up on Saturday. I just didn't have enough time to do that. I would have stayed for Raw too if I didn't have to work tonight, because I actually got home from coaching at about 8 o'clock. So I had to use Hulu to come back and watch Raw. It was a great experience, and it was actually my very first WrestleMania after 34 years of being a fan of professional wrestling. I finally sort of, you know, had to take the opportunity. The one time I did want to go was the WrestleMania in New Orleans. I didn't get a chance to, and of course that was the end of the streak. So I kind of made it a point to do whatever I could. Next opportunity is to go ahead and take it, no matter what, you know, what was on the card. And it turns out that it was probably one of the better WrestleManias that I've seen, and I was very fortunate enough to actually be there.
Cool. Cam, talk about what you did this weekend too, and then you guys can compare notes a little bit, and we can get into a little bit on that.
Sure. And where did you drive from, if I can ask?
Little Rock. Little Rock.
Little Rock. Oh, okay. So you were going north. Okay. So
yeah.
I drove in from Austin. So I got back like today around 4 o'clock. So yeah, for sure. What did I do? Oh gosh. I drove up Thursday. One of my best friends from undergrad has a house out there in Dallas, so I got to stay out there with him. I was the stage manager, essentially, for Wale Mania. If anybody doesn't know, Wale does the theme song for NXT 2.0. You would remember him from the rap battle with the Usos and the New Day. So the guy who actually wrote that segment, Kaz, was a producer for WWE. Him and his buddy Emilio Sparks, who do is it the Matt Man podcast on the Ringer or the Masked Man? Yeah. With I'm so bad with names. I feel bad with Michael Shoemaker. They host an event with Wale WrestleMania week every year, so I was like the stage manager for that. One of the craziest, most fun nights I've ever had. It's basically like a concert eventually, but it starts off as like just a big party. Like Omos was there and rapped the entirety of Jay-Z's PSA. It's the most surreal thing you've ever seen in life. Like, because he's really like 7'2", and nobody else in the world is 7'2". So it's him just rapping to a giant audience, one of Jay-Z's best songs. And he comes off stage and I look at him and I say, "Hey, you're not supposed to be able to do that." And he looks at me and laughs and asks why. But amazing night. I got to meet Jade Cargill, and I was trying to get Wale's people on stage, and we're arguing with the police about capacity. And I literally stop everybody to shake Jade's hand because Jade is Jade. Amazing night. Super fun. And I'm going to post. I'll talk more about it on Twitch on Wednesday and Thursday. But, yeah, it was great. Wade, the coolest thing ever, Carmelo Hayes sees me and he's like, "Hey, it's the older me," because he decides I'm like his uncle, and I'm like, "No," and it was fantastic. It was great. Ricky Starks was there. It was just everybody. Like Big Swole is a friend of mine, so I finally got to meet Cedric, who's like the coolest guy. Me and Daniel Garcia were at Waffle House at 4 a.m. It was one of those nights. So yeah, just a great experience. Friday, I went to Impact at the Fairmont. They ran at a hotel, and I was with Daniel again. Really, really fun night. Got to see Speedball Bailey for the first time. It was him and Alex Shelley. So fun. It was a great night. Impact was Friday. On Saturday, we actually did not go to any events. We went and watched the Final Four. Faye Jackson came and hung out with us. MJ Jenkins, who was in developmental. We did a brunch with Big Swole, Seth Alexander. That was super fun. And then Sunday, we had people over to watch the show. So a super fantastic weekend. Oh, and wait, I forgot. So I'm at the Black thing on Thursday with like all the rappers and all the young wrestlers, and it was great. Like we have a big camera roll. Like RVD and Katie Forbes were there. So So Katie Forbes is like giving RVD, you know, one of those dances, family-friendly show, and you just see me off in the corner, like, meeting somebody. I told Carl Anderson how he cheated me over in beer pong like 3 years ago, and he made amends for it, so that was fun. Montez Ford and Angelo Dawkins were there. Just everybody, Jordan Grace, met John Gresham. You name it, if they're like black or black adjacent, under 32, they were at the show. And everybody was hanging out together, and it was all love everywhere. It's super fun. But no, so Friday I switched it up. Thanks to Rich, I actually went to Conrad's show, which was Conrad Thompson, William Regal, Eric Bischoff, Jeff Jarrett, and Jeff Hardy. So we did a media scrum before that. There were only like 8 of us. It was like a real like private thing. Really fun, really insightful. I've never talked to most of those guys, but Eric Bischoff is just a wealth of information. I actually got to pull him aside after, and we just talked Scott Hall for a while. I wasn't comfortable asking him about a deceased friend in front of a bunch of people, but we went off to the side. We talked. It was great. I got to see my guy Nick Gage, who I haven't seen in like 2 years, and then William Regal and Nick Gage actually talked for a while, and like I was the fly on the wall for that, and it was so fun. It was really great. So, yeah, just a really fun weekend. I have to work tomorrow, like the real job. I'm not ready. But, no, it was very exciting. And then this morning I actually did meet up with a friend of mine who works on the WWE Spanish side. And we talked for a while just about the stuff she's working on. Saw a bunch of fans like going like in and out of downtown Dallas. So, yeah, super, super fun weekend. It really was.
Excellent. So, Zach, that sounds wild. Zach, back to you. Tell me more about what you want to share about your experience at Mania.
Yeah. You know, like I said, it was just a fun time for someone to kind of never been in that situation before, and it was just me, and so kind of really just sort of took it as it went, and really got to experience kind of two very different nights, because night one I was sort of in the corner, and around me was sort of a lot more sort of smarter fans, so it was a lot more of a you know, kind of talking about the wrestlers and who they are and you know, the quality of the match and all that stuff. And the second night actually was somewhat more in the middle, better seats. And I was sort of more around, I guess, what you consider to be the fans, just the normal WWE fans that were, you know, clapping and sort of, you know, good guys and bad guys and, you know, a lot of kids and, you know, that would, you know, yell and scream anytime someone got hit or, you know, a comeback or anything like that. I was going to say that actually, you know, one of the, down parts of the AJ Styles and Edge match was actually sort of marred by a fight that actually happened in the section to the left of me, right in the middle of what I've heard was sort of a down point of the match. So I actually got to spend a little bit of time sort of watching security and actual physical cops come and take a couple guys out. You know, all in all, it was just a great experience, and getting to see, you know, obviously everyone that was there, and it was definitely worth the trip, and definitely looking forward to next time that, you know, WrestleMania comes around.
Was there anything that just stood out as kind of the most unexpected part of the experience, either in a positive, a negative, or a weird way?
Are you talking about just the matches themselves, or just the
the whole experience, just going to the show
there.
And being, you know, yeah, the pageantry of it, how just obviously bigger and different it feels than going to a regular, you know, a TV show,
right,
or house show.
Right. Yeah. I mean, obviously, yeah, it was just a massive stadium, and you know, I'd say probably, you know, 95% full for most of it, I would say. You know, around what, 66 or maybe 67,000. We don't know that yet, but, it was just like they actually did a very good job of having the show run fairly smooth to where I never once was sort of sitting there thinking I'm bored. I know I've heard people talking about, you know, watching it on TV, how they felt that it was sort of long at certain times, but for me actually being there, it actually ran fairly smooth, and I really can't complain about how they were able to keep us in-house entertained. The one thing that I do sort of miss that I wish I could have had the opportunity to hear was, you weren't able to really hear much of anything. The mics weren't as great, I don't know if someone else had that same experience or not, but for me, it was very difficult to hear. Some were better than others. Of course, obviously, it could have just been their ability to talk, I guess, in some form of, you know, expanding their voice a bit. But I did have issues hearing, and I think for the most part, yeah, it was a great experience, and look forward to, you know, going back again.
Very cool. Anything else you want to add at all, Zach, before we let you go?
No, just that, I just wanted to, you know, to thank you, and I know it's, you know, first and foremost, you know, I know you put in so many hours a day, and just know that, you know, you've impacted my life as a fan, and being able to have the opportunity to always, you know, read your newsletter and obviously get the opportunity to talk with you is definitely a pleasure, and you always keep me motivated to keep, you know, and stay a wrestling fan, and you know, even through the dark years, and I mean, you can name them from 87 to now. There's been, you know, there's been some turds out there, it's always great to have the opportunity to hear, you know, what your thoughts and opinions are, and especially in this community that we're in. So I just wanted to say, you know, personally, just, you know, thank you for everything that you've done and all the years that you've put in.
Well, thank you so much, Zach. I'm glad that you reached out and said you wanted to call in and talk about the weekend, and I'm glad that you did.
Well,
I appreciate
the
words very much. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Never gets old hearing stuff like that, Cam. Appreciate Zach saying that.
I love that for you, Wade. I do.
Okay. Let's just wrap up here with a couple emails, including Zach in Texas. Zach says, I'm surprised I made it through Raw, given that my brain melted after the Cody promo. First of all, his entrance looked incredibly cheap. Cody's promo is going to get praised because he gave a clear mission statement about winning a title, but I'm sorry, I find the whole thing disgusting, especially using his father's memory. In so many words, he admitted to being obsessed with WWE and the way his family was treated. It rendered his entire AEW run a complete farce. Cody never moved on. He never put his entire being into AEW. He wanted to get back to WWE and right a perceived wrong. I believe his tears were genuine, but they didn't have their desired effect on me because I kept hearing his talk of revolutions playing in my head. With Selena and Carmella split and Rhea and Liv in the process, there's now two teams in the women's division, including the champs, so those belts Sasha and Naomi have may as well be toys. I was relieved to not see Becky. With any luck, big time, Bex died at Mania, and she's a babyface when she comes back in 6 weeks. MVP turned on Lashley after Mania. That makes no sense at all. Worse yet, it means the Omos push isn't over, and we're going to be stuck watching a Lashley feud with great value to Kenbi Mutombo for months. They turned Elias into Salvatore Sincere. That kind of works. And had Veer finally debut by beating up the least talented person on the roster. Ouch. If WWE that's mean to Ray. Oh, wait, you mean Dominic. If WWE tried to make sense, it would be nice. I mean, there are a few things we can respond to there, Cam, but Zach not pleased with this episode. The idea that, like, Cody didn't believe in the revolution and didn't believe in AEW, of course he did. This is a storyline. It's a storyline created in grains of truth, embellished greatly to tell a good story on TV, and also save face a little bit because of how things fell apart for him in AEW. Cody's got to construct a narrative that he can embrace. And that's what he's done. He did it at the press conference after WrestleMania with the media. You know, just he won't deny anything specifically. But he will say in a vague general sense that there were things that were said that weren't true. But the truth is, I want to be here. And then he just goes into storyline mode. And I'm fine with that short of, you know, specifically calling out specific accurate reporting that he knows to be accurate as a lie. I think that's not cool. But if he's going to talk in a general sense, it's sort of left up to everybody to decide what he's talking about themselves. Because I'm, you know, as a reporter, I do not enjoy, nor do I ever endorse somebody knowingly trying to discredit a reporter who got a story right because the correct story was inconvenient for their ego. But I don't think Cody got specific enough for that to be the case, but walked that line. But obviously, everybody saw it with their own eyes. Things disintegrated for Cody in AEW. Creatively, on camera, politically, behind the scenes, he was frustrated with lack of creative power. The story has shifted from he wanted to be a booker to now that he can't be, and he's making a ton of money in WWE, and he's really excited about what Vince McMahon wants to do with him. The narrative now, the public-facing story, is he just wants to be a wrestler, and he wants to be a world champion, and he wants to win this specific title that his dad almost won, if not for champion's advantage. I'm sure there's some truth in it, but it's made up for television. There's always going to be angry at Cody for it, and it doesn't undo the sincerity of him wanting to create a revolution. I buy that. It just didn't work out. And now he's making the best that he can with picking up the pieces and constructing something that should on air, I think, work better than meta Cody verse, you know, self-indulgent, unedited, you know, yeah, the stuff that he was doing on AEW TV. You know, he even joked in the media Q&A on Saturday night, you know, he thought that a GoGo promo was great. And then he went on Twitter and people wanted him dead for it. And, you know, I mean, I like Cody. I like his deadpan sense of humor. And I think he's super charismatic and he charmed that room. He was engaging. He probably played the whole, am I allowed to say, wrestler thing a little more than probably WWE is even comfortable with, but maybe they don't care at this point. But, you know, I just want him more than anything to be the best compelling character on television so that fans know how to react to him. They react in a way that is in sync with the story that they're telling on TV. And I think they took a step in that direction tonight, Ken.
I think, well, first, the first thing I want to say to Nick, I would
Zach,
be careful.
Zach,
I apologize. I would be careful about calling a wrestler in 2022 a great value to Kimbe Mutombo. I would curb that maybe a little bit. There's probably a clearer reference you can make that's a bit more current, that's a bit more informed. But outside of that, I think one thing this weekend really taught me, and not that I didn't know, but we were in a room that was like a big event, and there were AEW wrestlers and champions, MLW wrestlers and champions, Impact wrestlers and champions, NXT wrestlers and champions, retired legends and champions, all in the same space. And so when we talk about like the value and the belief and the galvanization of an AEW being the revolution, I think we also have to remember that these things aren't created purely out of spite for another place. They're created out of necessity and belief. But it very rarely means that X wrestler with Y belief won't go work for Z company. And so once you start to realize that these things are fluid, that these people want to be successful, but given the right opportunity, they would go anywhere else, it will allow you to enjoy the show more without you feeling like somebody's betraying someone else. Like I said this on Twitter, Wade, if I worked at Burger King or if you worked at Burger King and McDonald's came through and said, we'll give you $1 more an hour and you won't have to work weekends, you would tattoo the golden arches on your back. You just would. Because at the end of the day, these things are still a job. These are still people with aspirations, but their rent's always due before the third. These exact same people. So, yeah, I think that, like I said earlier, people close to Cody did not know that Cody's contract was coming up or that he was planning on, like, going dark. That's something that he decided with his family. And, yeah, like you said, now he is trying to make the storyline work without burning any more bridges than he has. That's just the game. You know what I'm saying? That's, and not the wrestling game. I'm not trying to sound like smart wrestling insider person. That's the game at every single job anybody's ever worked because everybody has the same bills. It's just what it is. So, no, I don't feel like Cody is all of a sudden being disingenuous. I feel like Cody's a wrestler and a wrestling promoter, and he's going to give you just enough truth for you to be involved, but just enough of a lie for it to be interesting. It's just what the game is, and we should enjoy the ride.
One more email here. JB from Detroit says, well, it's good to know Cody hasn't decided to move away from his overindulgent meandering promos that could have been 2 minutes but turned into 10. Cody said a lot of words without really saying much, in my opinion. Maybe I'm being overly pessimistic, but the crying honestly seemed forced and like bad acting to me. Also, why would Seth Rollins' character shake Cody's hand? Obviously, I think Cody still has a lot of potential within WWE, but while it started off pretty well on WrestleMania Saturday, I think it took a step back when he got on the mic tonight. Love the show and go VIP. So yeah, I mean, you know, some negative emails here. I haven't seen like an online poll or gotten a real sense of the larger vibe as far as Cody goes, but I stand by. I thought this was a good promo and very storyline based. And like I said, I think it's going to offend some people who want things grounded more in reality, but I'm all for give fans a story to believe in and tell it coherently, keep it interesting, and make sure that we have a reason to either cheer or boost somebody, you know, the vast majority of the time. And I am eager to see how he does. I am not, Cam, I am not still, like, mega confident that Cody's going to get himself over as a top guy. You know, he is quirky. He had an audience that adored him and, like, saw him as revolutionizing the industry in helping co-found a movement that led to AEW and a true alternative to WWE that they could embrace. And they turned on him over the course of a couple of years during a pandemic. And you think about where he was at the beginning of that, standing out at Daly's Place and kind of addressing the wrestling community and where he was, you know, not too far coming out of the Daly's Place run. You know, he lost that audience, and really good wrestlers who have creative control and a handle on their character and the fan base, that doesn't happen to. So the question is, does Vince McMahon have enough commitment and understanding of the Cody character to keep him on course? And has Cody learned anything? Cody wasn't self-deprecating about what happened in AEW. He said in the media Q&A Saturday night, he didn't know if he'd have a split. He said he didn't know how the crowd would react, but he had what he characterized as a split crowd late last year. Now, that is a generous, generous phrasing of what he had. He had an AEW audience vociferously turn against him. We're there, let's go Cody, Cody sucks or whatever. Yeah, I mean, it's dueling chants are fun. And I mean, technically, there were still people cheering Cody, no question. But it is a generous phrasing to say split. And it's always a consolation prize. Any wrestler who embraces being a babyface who's getting booed by 50% or more of the audience and they act like that's a good thing and they're for it, that's not real. I mean, they would rather everyone react the way that they were designed to react. And it's pretty rich that Cody said that when Cody literally went out on live television twice and tried to explain to fans why they should be cheering him. Explained why they should be cheering him. And yet he sat there with a straight face on Saturday night and said, oh, a split audience. I'll take that. That's great. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but I mean, it was like, oh, a split audience was great too. If that's what they did, I'd love that too. Bring me a split audience. It's like, no, you're totally relieved. I mean, it's my opinion. I can't get in his head. I believe he is absolutely relieved that he got cheered and was nervous about that. And hopefully he and Vince McMahon can figure out how to keep the fans on his side. Go ahead, Cam. I know what time it is.
Yeah, no. I mean, the fun thing about Cody, and it's not just my kind of secondhand experience, but I've heard this from other people who kind of operate in that lane. Like, Cody was kind of one of the go-tos for black wrestlers in AEW. I don't have the capacity to explain why or what made that happen. Like, you guys have watched the reality show, so you kind of know how that works. But Cody, everything Cody said about, like, hey, you know, black athletes are at the forefront of the NBA and the NFL. So why aren't they in the forefront of wrestling? Like, this is not Cody saying things because he thinks they sound nice. These are Cody saying things because that's really how he feels. Like, everybody I've talked to has always said no. Like, Cody's not saying one thing and doing another. We really have conversations. He really cares about how we feel about things. He really looks out for us. But like you said, it's a situation where that EVP thing was sounded great. It was a great title until they consolidated power. And I'm not even saying they shouldn't have done that, because I think with wrestling, you can't have too many cooks in the kitchen. What I'm saying is, Cody has never gone into a situation thinking he wasn't doing the best not only for himself, but for the people around him and the world. Like, I know that sounds like a wild statement, but Cody always thought what he was doing was the right thing. Genuinely, that's where he comes from. And so I think if you ever had to show somebody a case study of where it all went wrong, it's the Anthony Ogogo stuff. I think that Cody saw it as an opportunity to do the America's not perfect, but America is what we have. But he didn't realize he's doing it against a black British guy who has very similar experiences to black Americans. And he didn't really see what the issue was. And it's not because he's an idiot. It's because he really does have an ideal of what he thinks the world is. And so I also think that when we look now, like, look, Cody's making himself more of a profitable person with less responsibility than ever. And people forget those things do go together. If they told you, hey, we'll give you more money than you ever made, and you also don't have to say anything, that'd be fantastic. I'd love to be a rich mime. But no, in all seriousness, I think that Cody's always had good intentions, and now he's in a position where he can just be good at what they actually need him to do. He doesn't have to overstep, and I do think that takes a weight off his shoulders. And I think we're going to get the best out of him because of that.
Well put, well put. Cam, tell people how they can hear more from you in between your appearances here on the Post Show.
Absolutely. So Twitter and Instagram, Seahawk. I hate to come on here because it sounds like I'm bragging, but I don't get to do this a whole lot. So I was headed to WrestleMania, and I was going to Dallas, and I was like, hey, I have 14,900 followers. It would be great to have 15,000 before Mania. And I woke up, and I had 15,030, and one of them was the fantastic Kevin Owens, who I love to death, who only follows like 200 people. So it was really,
wow.
Really sweet. So like me having to root for like between Kevin Owens and Steve Austin, who has who's like my good friend in high school used to kick it at his ranch. I hated having to root between them. That really sucked, but you know what it is. But no, so Twitter and Instagram, Seahawk. If you are an Instagram person and you follow wrestlers, you might have seen me on a bunch of their stuff this weekend. Again, Wade has just put me in position to be the cool uncle at this point, so I'm just doing that. We are not doing an East Coast cast on Wednesday because Travis has a fantastic state job now. I'm so happy for him. But no, Wednesday, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central, I will be here on Twitch. So Twitch.tv/Seahawk. I'm going to outline basically my whole weekend, from all the stuff I did at Wale Mania to going to Impact to being at Waffle House all night to all the other stuff I would never say on a family show. So it'll be great. But yeah, those are the primary spots you can find me. Also, Wade, also, my man Zach Haydorn, who I love to death. He's doing a great job here at the Torch. The PW Torch YouTube channel is alive and well as it goes. Later this week, you will see the Scrum Media I did, myself, Sean Ross Sapp, Dominic D'Angelo, among others. You will see some interviews from Eric Bischoff, Comrade Thompson, Jeff Hardy, and the fantastic Jeff Jarrett. Wait, I asked Jeff Jarrett, what's it like to be in your fifth decade of wrestling? And you know what? I've said some funny things about Jeff Jarrett over the years, like, there's no money, how is this working, this and that. He is the most charming man.
Yes, he is.
I get it. I was immediately like, you know what, if I had money, I'd give him some. He was so charming and so sweet. But they all were great, and so you'll get to see that on the PW Torch YouTube channel here the next week. But, yeah, again, Wade, I only get on here so often, but this weekend was kind of the culmination of so many things I've done. You have helped me so much. You were literally putting me into rooms I never thought I'd be in, so I really do appreciate it.
Well, I'm happy for you, and it just sounds like you had a wonderful weekend, and I look forward to a few off-record stories that you're going to send my way.
Absolutely.
I shouldn't say that on air because I'm like, but yeah, I mean, that's part of one of the perks of this job is you get to
Absolutely.
Hear stuff that stays in a lockbox. cool. So follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller. Follow our brand at PW Torch. As Cameron said, we have our YouTube page up and running again with new content we've had every day for a few days here, including me on camera presenting my alternate universe WrestleMania lineup. And it isn't fantasy booking like, I could do it better. This was just a challenge. It was, what if I had to create a WrestleMania lineup out of the current roster that WWE chose, but I can't use any of the same matches? Nobody can be against anybody who was actually on the same show. Can you take that challenge and turn it into a good show? And might it even be better? Because in my world, Big E didn't get hurt. So, because everything would be different, you know, in my universe. So I just created night one and night two and just kind of thought, what options, it was sort of an intellectual exercise. What options did WWE actually have that they didn't do? And with 2020 hindsight, would some of them or all of them, have made for a better show? Obviously, Saturday and Sunday turned out to be really, I think, thumbs up shows, good events. But it was, a lot of celebrity stuff, a lot of nostalgia stuff. What could they have done with the roster that they had if they took a different approach? So that's there, about an 18-minute video. I encourage everybody to check that out when you get a chance. And then, as you said, Zach and Tyler Sage doing some daily news updates, just quick, informal 5-6 minute catch you up on what's going on type thing. And the weekly fireside chat with Zach and Tyler going more in depth for about an hour. So just search, it's youtube.com/PWTorch or just search PW Torch. Cam, always great having you on. Good luck tomorrow. I'm sorry to keep you up so late. Well, it's not time. You. It's not that bad.
It's great. No, I'm fine. Thank you so much. I'm not going to bed anytime soon because, again, stuff we'd have to talk about off air. But, no, it's always fantastic to be on with you, Wade. I'm going to ride this out for another few hours and go back and figure out where these kids need to be put as far as their classes go tomorrow. So we'll do it.
Excellent. Thanks to our callers, our listeners, and we will talk to you all next time.